to start with subverting the sanity which makes utopia seem like a utopia. Utopia is only a nowhere and a no place and a thing you can never achieve. If you're mad enough to accept, or sane enough in capitalism's terms, to accept that you can't ever achieve anything else. And I would like your experience now. Now I've bared my soul and told you my part of it. I'd like to hear a few other people here tell me their experience.
I could tell you something.
Hang on, I want to say my experience.
You haven't spoken yet, so I'm
this is the last time I went broken stuff here. He destroyed our whole family. They ended up bumping each other.
Yeah. Did you want to?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just an experience that I had last week. I was called in for a restart. I wanted an interview. So I had to wait for the, like, 2 weeks. Anyway, so it was. I had to go to this place. It was the Canterbury Academy. It was a big building. It was a splendid looking building, like, sort of inside, like, sort of gilded paint on the wall and all that sort of thing. Nice comfortable chairs. And the first day I was there with 18 of us supposed to be on this, what they call it, a course. And as we entered this academy, there was another sort of course taking place as well, but this was the sort of directors of the employment, Department of Employment. And They were having nice food and all that sort of thing. And we were should be in this room, like, you know, where we had to sit down from 9:30 in the morning till 4:30 in the evening and just listen to what we're told. And like in the first hour, people start just going off their heads, they start just going mad, shouting at this bloke. You know, this fellow was standing up there like he was American, dressed like a cowboy. And like lectures was about like how we should be looking for a job and how we should present ourselves for future exploitation. I mean, the things that were actually said was unbelievable. I mean, they were actually sort of like things with like, I mean, I'm kind of coming from the background of, like, you know, fighting like a dog, like in the unions during the 70s, like, you know, to sort of like to make life a little bit better and sort of like for working people. And here we are in, like, being told, like, you know, that we have to, like, one of the options we have. If you work for 3 weeks for nothing, and then after the 3 weeks, then the employer has the right to actually choose you for the job, or you have a choice whether to take the job or not. I mean, this is what we're actually. This is what we're actually. I'm violent. I'm thinking to myself, like, I've got to be in here, because otherwise, if I'm not there from 9:30 to 4:30, I'm going to lose my dole. I'm going to be cut. This is what they actually tell you. And I mean, it was chaos right the way through. I mean, there was people there. Out of the 18 was there, there was more than half of them that I would consider mad to do it myself. Because, I mean, it was to the extent, like, where we were actually sort of getting so angry that we were actually demanding. The first day, I was hoping that we'd have sort of a mutiny, because it was 3 to 4 people actually calling for somebody to be brought down from the employment exchange to answer some of the questions that were actually being put to this car, whether it was most man, or if it didn't have a few other answers. He was there, like, you know, as an agent of a subcontractor for the government to run these courses. And we were there having to listen to this. I mean, like, this was, to me, after this week, I was totally drained. I was totally drained, you know, emotionally, because I felt, and I was angry as well, because I felt like for 1 week of my life that I was subjected to this sort of, like, feeling of well, my rights had been taken away from me. From 9:30 to 4:30, they were saying to me, you can't leave here. And this is actually what's happening. And also, what they're trying to do is they're trying to bend the minds of people as well into compromising, into, like, accepting this. What I see now is total exploitation. It was, for me, more a sad experience today. I'm still angry.
Well, I think Colleen's reaction was not so much that everyone's mad, but everyone's like children, they haven't grown up. And in other words, because children haven't been repressed, they haven't been brainwashed, they're still experiencing life physically and through every channel, and it hasn't been battered out of them, then if you reach a certain age and you're still like that, then you're mad. Women are mad as well, because women remain like children, especially when they have children themselves. in the eating house, everyone is like children. She says it's like a madhouse. It could easily be the dining room in the madhouse. And when I was at school, I too refused to go to school for some time. And I was labelled a manic depressive. But in fact, I was very happy. I couldn't understand it because I was quite a happy youth in those days. And I used to just wander around and not go to school. And I'm quite happy. And I was called a manic depressive. And yeah, I think you're right what you say. I can't really expand on it anymore. But madness is good.
Well, it's one other example of how employment drives you mad. I had to go on a course as well. Me and 11 others on Tuesday had to do a one-day problem-solving thing. And I was sitting on the end, and the first thing everybody had to do was to come out with their problem, the biggest problem that they had, and we were then to be born had to deal with these problems. Of course, when it got round to me, I said, well, I'm sorry, but... I don't have any problems, you know. Everybody had been telling this lecturer about their problem they had with work, and I pointed out, look, these people haven't been giving you work problems, they've been giving you problems of employment. And nearly all of them were, their immediate boss wasn't allowing them to express themselves enough, or wasn't allowing them to, they wanted to get on, you know, their immediate boss wasn't allowing them to show how hard they were willing to work for the company and this kind of thing. And I pointed out, look, now these are not work problems, these are all problems of employment. I don't have these kind of problems, you know. I mean, I come away at 5 o'clock every night and, you know, I leave all that behind. I don't even worry too much about it between 8 o'clock and 5 o'clock. But at least it was a bit encouraging, because at the time the lecturer came up and she said to me, I couldn't really say anything this morning, but I actually agree with you. So there is some hope.
Did you want to come back?
No, it just seems to me there's a kind of a deep-based conspiracy, because I've just been talking to have to retire. You see, I'm very time-rich, and it's smashing, I'd really. And I listen to the radio sometimes, and they're talking about feeling sorry for the unemployed, and then I'm listening, and then either I feel sorry for them. And then I figure, am I mad? They're talking about me. It's like I'm a disembodied person sitting around feeling sorry for people that haven't got any work, and here am I, I'm enjoying not having any work. In fact, if they feel bad about it, I begin to look and think, Jesus, am I actually a qualified lazy bum? And I face that fact too. But I can be a qualified lazy bastard, because my mate said to me when I retired, he said, yeah, he said, you've got 100% basic pension. That's all the £56 pension to me. I said, that ain't much of a bloody reward, is it? He said, but you served your time. So there's a lovely volunteering expression. Serving your time. The only regret somehow or another is that I've served it. That's where I feel bad, is that I kind of served it. So I'm thinking, you know, this is crazy. I now, the only thing that I really makes me crazy now, and this is a bit of a practical problem, is that all my fellow human beings, male, female, dog, cat, or whatever that is, they fall for this. And you know, it's like I'm old enough now, the newspapers come around. Every 3 years you could reproduce the same headlines. If you didn't put the date on it, you'd never know that this newspaper had been printed 60 years ago. And I figure, Jesus Christ. What's going on here? Because if you gather together all these newspapers, it's just like on a roundabout, and you can't get off the sodding thing. And I've been quite frank with a very dear friend of mine here. He's always tired because they're working him to death, you see. And yet, the happiest time I ever saw he had at Christmas, he fell asleep for 4 hours in front of the fire. And when he woke up, it's like he was transformed. The boss hadn't got his hand around his neck anymore. You know, but
practically speaking, this it might be a good, this is what we've got to get a grip of, because as what he said, they're all walking around here, they lock us up. But this is what we've got to do all the time, is to get our way through this. And I think it can be done, because this is what got me about, no, I've had enough of depression, I can't take it anymore, you know, these utopian things that make you feel depressed, I ain't got time enough anymore. I think there's a more happier way of doing it, because it needs sorting out, not only for us, because we're happy already, we reached the sublime stage of something or other, but they need it out there. They need
to be in
here, actually.
I posed a question, oh, sorry, at the back, first, oh. And not coming in. I agree with what Steve was saying about madness inside, it's not always necessarily a bad thing. It's a sign that could be a positive sign that something's wrong in your life. These symptoms are putting you towards it, landing it and changing it. If you're over anxious or what have you, depressed, maybe because you're in a terribly oppressive job or a tyrannical parent are ruining over you or what have you. So the whole question of mental health and what have you, it's not always necessarily a bad thing. And we read in the papers every now and then about certain women and men who have what a lot of people would initially agree would be what a great setup. They've got a nice house, they have plenty of money coming in, the children are doing well at school, etc., etc., but the person feels as if they're going mad. They're insane, they're not happy. Why? Well, it's probably because they're not being who they want to be. They're living inauthentic existences because they unquestionably accepted what they should be, what somebody else wants them to be. And that largely comes from their family, or it comes from school and other significant people in their life. You know, this is what it means to be happy, this is what, you know, you get a good job, good university, and everything. People have a tendency not to question these things because, you know, autonomy is not for us, not for you. You can only attain that when you're a mature adult. And then you can start thinking things out. But by then, very often it's too late. But if I can come on to, I think it's a very useful thing to postulate utopia. And one thing which occurred to me, I'm not at all clear about this, I've just blown it out really, is that to what extent is our, for example, one aspect of our being is sexuality, to what extent is that culturally influenced? And I would, I'm inclined to believe that it's very heavily influenced by our culture, our sexuality, and so many other aspects of our behaviour. And let's just say if there was a society where homosexual relations were considered a norm, society had homosexual values, and heterosexuality was the minority, a reversal of the case as it is now. Well, I would, as long as society could sustain itself through procreation, what have you, I would argue that the great majority of people would fit in with that, as they fit in now with heterosexuality, because that is the dominant form in this society. Do you agree with that?
I think that was the case in ancient Greece. It's probably true, yeah, but to be honest, it's not something I think about very much. I don't think it's very important. Well, I mean, I think in a free society there'd be all sorts of ways of expression. I mean, in this utopia, some people were celibate, some people were solely heterosexual, most people were bisexual. I don't know, really.
Would the speaker and the audience, or the studio audience, dismiss psychiatric medicine as a whole? I mean, as some members might know, the psychiatrist in the party, or the entire one, he's not here today because we're not dealing with the economic crisis. But, but nevertheless, and you know, I don't want to do him injustice, but talk about madness. I mean, give an example about, I mean, there's plenty of eccentric people about. I mean, I ride back and forth to work on the bike, and I notice a bloke quite regularly sort of walking along like this. Now, he's completely harmed. Another bloke I sometimes haven't seen lately, however cold it is, a black fellow actually, about middle-aged, always just had a shirt and trousers, never had a coat, however cold it is. Now, he's a bit eccentric. Can't believe he doesn't feel any cold, but he's harmless. But a few weeks ago, there was a fellow who stabbed somebody on an underground. He was designated as a paranoid schizophrenic. And there are these, plenty of members want to quarrel with this designation. But there are people in society who are dangerous to themselves and dangerous to people around them, to society in general. Now, can we visualise a situation in a social society where these people have to be physically restrained? Well, like within a comfortable surrounding, yeah, but have to be not let out of their own volition. And these would have to be diagnosed, wouldn't they, by people who presumably got some sort of credentials and expertise. I mean, are we dismissing this all out of hand because of abuses of psychiatrists? You know, which can be fairly level against the psychiatric profession, I think. But I don't think we could throw the whole thing out. And I don't think that, you know, we can use this term day one, that the whole of the mental institutions, the whole of the inmates, if you use that term, will be let out on society and saying we're prudent for that. Every single individual would be let out. I mean, these are serious. I'm raising this problem. But maybe we can't throw the whole lot out in total.
Right. I mean, we don't know if there's going to be people like that or not, but what we can say is that these people won't be, you know, pushed inside an institution for the convenience of the profit system or the convenience of that those people's family who can't cope with them because there's no support. And we can say they won't be abused wherever they are looked after or cared for or whatever. And we can say that it will be a democratic decision involving the community in which they live. And it would be for their benefit and the community's benefit, not for the convenience of keeping the system running smoothly.
At the back there.
I think you answered that point. I think you saw a strange thing else from the Guardian about the characters working at a security prison who against the rest of his profession spent many years trying to convince them that the work that he was doing was valid. Actually made the point that were actually very angry people in our city, mad, dangerous, and that in fact the work that he was doing with them enabled them to actually reconsider their lives and change direction with some degree of success. And the frightening thing about it was the opposition that he met with from the prison officers, the fellow psychiatrists, to the point of receiving death threats.
Well, this society doesn't and can't accommodate human feelings that everyone goes through, like grief in Connie's case, couldn't accommodate or contain or help her in her grief. So she ended up hitting her daughter. She ended up losing her daughter. They can't accommodate jealousy or any sort of human emotions. There's no room for it because profit comes before all that. Whereas this utopia describes, you know, in some detail how a society could set up its own institutions to deal with all these human emotions that make us human and allow us to be human, not just when we're children, but when we grow up, we can continue to be children, which is how Connie saw the people. In other words, remain human for our whole lives and be able to express our humanity.
Well, I was just going to raise the same point about the article that was in Jester's Guardian. The other interesting, he actually says something that has probably been saying for a long time, that people aren't actually born angry, are they? The other thing that crossed my mind, it's now become a fairly accepted view that people who commit sexual violence, rape, and so on, are very often victims of the same kind of violence when they were children. Well, if it's true of sexual violence, then why not of the kind of violence that these people are locked away for, which is more like what this fellow's saying here. It's, I'd advise anybody to read it if you can get hold of a copy. It's a very good article.
At the back there. We're very familiar with, in recent years, with the cliché that people, including the man who did the stabbing a couple of stations away from here, that was alluded to a minute ago, are being released from these 19th century, 18th century horrors, like coming out and so on, into the, I quote, community. Well, of course, there ain't no community for them to be released into. But I think Conrad Simpkins' point about what would happen in a socialist society to people with these inclinations is that they would be in a community, and that surely would be a very important factor. There being a community, a reality, I'm sure would have a material influence upon behaviour generally, even the most maladjusted individuals. In fact, I mentioned that Karen Nash, and it was earlier mentioned because Morris had alluded to it in Use of Nowhere. When I was a conscientious objector, I did spend a couple of years working there. And that was normal enough, and working in the kitchens was what I was doing, and that was normal enough. What wasn't normal was to attend, well, I was quite free to do so in my own time, the lectures which were available for psychiatric nurses and others in this institution. And the comrade who mentioned a few minutes ago about the course he had to go on to and the lecturer having to admit to him afterwards that his point had a lot to it. It reminded me of the fact that when I was attending this this lecture, they were talking about the problems of their inmates. A constant reference was made to normality and return to normality. And I remember saying to the lecturer, but, you know, could she tell us a little more about normality? You know, the world of the atomic bomb, the world of preparation for the atomic bomb. And I gave, in other fields, several other examples. Is that the normality that you're referring to? So that you're helping these people to return to? And she did concede that the normality that she was referring to wasn't all that normal. And just finally on the recollections front, I too went to a restart course not so long ago, and it didn't entirely surprise me, though it did rather amuse me, because the person running it, his main activity was as a nightclub comedian. He told us quite frankly about his main activity, and it was, I wouldn't say it was a laugh a minute, but it was a laugh every other minute. It was quite a good experience. So what he did for the employment situation, I really was left amazed in wonderment.
Yes. Well, just going to explain about jealousy. You mentioned, you were talking about jealousy, how it's not dealt with in a society, how it was rightly taken out in the utopian society. And because I think that jealousy largely comes from within. Can you say a little bit more about
it? What do you mean it comes from within?
And it's, jealousy is a negative thing, isn't it? Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. But it's a human thing as well.
Yeah, but how would it be dealt with?
Well, I mean, the example in the book was a sexual jealousy, basically, which is, I think, what most people think of when they think of jealousy. And I think in a free society, there'd be very little of that. But it's just an example of a human sort of emotion that in this utopia had a forum to be dealt with. Whereas in this society, it often leads to, like, stabbings and all sorts.
Yeah.
Green.
Possible futures that one imagines are actually not necessarily futures, but the fact of the description of the world as it is now, the state of the living, is being a kind of battle between the present and the token society that on one hand is multi-dimensional. self-managed by multinationals, and actually taking place at many different levels in our society, because institutions, global level, which capitalist institutions have continued to extend their power over the last few areas of the world to still live a different way of life. There's that. And in fact, that is quite crucial for women's rights and so on. All of those struggles, it's women's land rights affected the whole community, the communal way of life. It was empowering for them to be destroyed and they're forced into dependency on, and as men, they're forced into wage slavery, they're forced into dependency on them. And then it also battles at another level, at the psychological level, in the sense that anyone with an alternative vision is being increasingly edged out in our society, and it's continuing to be further and further. You write many attempts to put about practice, for example, in institutions that you're working on, like schools and so on. It's becoming increasingly impossible.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah, well, I just say about jealousy, I mean, it is, when you say it comes from within, it's very much related to ownership and possession, very much so. And then it comes as much from without as anything else. And the one thing we don't have in this society, when I was brought up in the very repressed 40s, you didn't think about your emotions and about what caused you to feel this and that. You had to go to school, you had to get your exams, you had to come out of school, you had to go into a job, you had to do your national service, you had to come out of that. That's why it was 25 before I had a thought in my head, because I was processed all the way along the line, you see. Now, things like jealousy, oddly enough, that what we need to understand those is the time to understand ourselves. And the point about that Frank was making about psychiatry in a utopia, and the lovely expression of being time rich, we don't have that. That's the thing we don't have in capitalist society, is time richness. And if you want to deal with anyone with any kind of stress or problem, the one thing they need is time. And that is the trick of it. It's the one thing that will help the situation more than anything else. It's time for people to listen, time to gain trust, time to give support, time to give warmth, time to just do things that don't make them stressed. And that's the one thing we don't have. And so when you go to see a psychiatrist in this society, even the best of them, they're looking at their watch to make sure you don't go over the hour because there's somebody else waiting.
How do you know?
You must have seen me come out.
I see you somewhere.
I think jealousy is a lot from having not enough important things to think about. What you really need is some useful work to do. I think when we can live useful lives and live the communal life, then we won't have time, or you needn't bother about jealousy and something like that.
I don't agree that you need time to get jealous. It just happens, doesn't it? I mean, if you're going to take work as a therapy for jealousy, I think I'll stick with jealousy.
Time to get jealous, do you? That's not the problem. I mean, you don't take a course in getting jealousy over 3 years and get a degree.
You should do it.
Oh, if you would.
I've got about another 10-15 minutes, so if anyone's got any...
Get back to the point, back to the street point you mentioned, which is about the demos of psychiatry. The point in that book, critics of psychiatry, is that it's the whole system of psychiatry, it's the institutions of psychiatry within this society. It's not about, as she makes the point, it's not about helping people, healing people, it's about making them more socially viable. In other words, it's making people fit in with the current society to live in, make them workers into wage slaves. So these are the repressive methods. For example, ECT is mentioned that about 30 years ago, psychiatrists used to use ECT against homosexuals, make them into heterosexuals. That's unthinkable now, but that was sort of a bit sensible about 30 years ago. But homosexuality then started being a mental illness, because it didn't fit in people's ideas of how you behave in society. But doesn't mean that all psychiatrists are bad evil, it's just the, how psychiatrists in society. Matt mentioned in the book there's, in the utopia, there is actually, you have institutions deal with people, stuff of problems, but in contrast to this society, actually, they're dealt with in a sympathetic way, their problems are really solved, they're not even drunk, they have bits of the brains knocked out.
And it's voluntary as well.
Voluntary as well, that's right. Go back to the idea of utopians, utopia novel, the value in it really is that it expresses ideas and also that it shows possible how human behavior is different from, how behavior could be different from what we have now. I don't think utopias are not necessarily useful in actually describing an organization, because the author is always going to put their own prejudice out of how they see things. Like, Marge Pearcy's utopia, she goes a bit further, they always get the impression that like 1970s ideas come out of it. A relaxation, they smoke marijuana, and that's just, that's like what the past Americans did in 1970s. Same in Leo Morris's Abuse from Nowhere, you say it's very much 1970s. Very much like 19th century setting. You still have this, the women are still serving together. You still have the idea of how women are beautiful and men are strong and masculine. It's very much like, you're always going to put your own, right, you brought up a certain world, so you always put your own prejudices.
Can I say, I took the thing about the mental hospital as I was reading more into it than I should, but it seemed to be an analogy for society in general. Mm-hmm. That it was a mad world, and that he was a person who was struggling against a mad world, totally imprisoned within it, and with all threats of these electrodes being inserted in her brain, really, her brain being fixed and totally conditioned into responses that she couldn't control, all that sort of thing. And that the point of the book really was that here's an example of a person who was struggling against that and never really gave up the struggle. That it's part of the fact of this whole institution being part of an immense establishment against which her individual protests seemed to be quite ridiculous and indeed bad. She never lost faith in her own sense of right, even at the point, as Emma said, that she took action against the whole thing in the end, poisoned the doctor's coffee at Bedford. So I think it was a very, very good book from that point of view. I thoroughly enjoyed it. As for it being a useful sort of vision of the future, well, to me that was really, I think, the least interesting part. I think that was quite fairly boring, I think. I mean, there's always an ambivalence about these so-called utopian visions anyway as to whether they're futuristic or what. You know, the time scale of the thing is always very, very confused. And I'm always tempted to think that really, in fact, they're not about the future at all, but usually what they're really about is some idealised past that most of them really look backwards, in the sense that I think William Morris's News from Nowhere look back to an idealised kind of English peasant life. And so, as Emmett suggested with this book, that it also looked back in an idealised way to a sort of peasant, perhaps in this case, as the lady's Mexican, perhaps to some sort of Indian, much more communal way of going about agriculture, that sort of thing. So I don't think that was the very interesting part of it. I think you've really got to, if you really want to get into the thing, the route is much more prosaic, actually, and less adventurous. It's much more humdrum, because we do have, in fact, a very reliable, systematic method of saying what the alternative society could be like, and that is the method of what socialism would have to do to solve existing problems on a basis of common ownership, democratic control, and production for use. And if we bear in mind something else that Emma said, which I think is incredibly important, that however you envisage socialism, there is no attitude in it, or no action, that would be entirely new. Everything that would happen in a socialist society
is forms of behaviour that already exist. So in a sense, to make this idea of utopia is even more ambiguous, you can in fact, if it's possible, argue the future from experience. And I mean, cooperation already exists and all these sorts of things. There's nothing about socialism that would be entirely new. So if we bear that in mind, that we do have a much more scientific, a systematic method by which we can talk sensibly about an alternative society, instead of wandering about in what you might call a fog of utopianism, that it will be the practical things that socialism to solve existing problems on the basis of common ownership, etc. That is the ordinary systematic way of going about it.
Wow. As I say, going about the madman, I mean, I think one flew over the cuckoo's nest is a good book, The World is a Madhouse. But going back to William Morris and looking backwards, I mean, that's the title of Edward Bellamy's novel. Yeah. And somebody said that William Morris should have called his Looking Backwards and Edward Bellamy should have called his News from Nowhere. But, I mean, it was in reaction to Looking Backwards that William Morris wrote that novel. And quite honestly, I had to live in one of them. I would live in Looking Backwards, because I'm a sort of person that belongs to an urban society and I like central heatings and toilets with flushes. I don't want to go back to some primitive world. Nor was it Metaposit? Yeah. It's not a Yotab, but I'd ask what time the first train out of there if I was in there.
Well, thanks for a collection of £27.87. Now, would anyone like... We've got a few minutes to go. Has anyone got anything else to say before we finish? If not, then we can adjourn the meeting now, and there'll be refreshments outside for anyone who wants them. Thank you.